That was a nice shot. Welcome. You're taking Dead Aim with Charlie Nance. Taking Dead Aim is sponsored by RBC Wealth Management. Now, here's the host of Taking Dead Aim, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy, and I can't believe I'm letting it happen to me again. Tiger Woods isn't just one of my favorite golfers of all time. Full disclosure, he's one of my favorite athletes of all time. I'm completely in the tank for the guy. That being said, I've been let down now twice by his comebacks from back surgery. No way was I going to be a buyer of Tiger stock ever again. Last week began comeback number 3 from back surgery number 4 at his Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas at the Albany Resort. Damn, he's done it to me again. I haven't seen Tiger's swing look this good, effortless, powerful, and on balance in a long, long time. And I'm all in. I cannot wait to see what happens when he tees it up in a real PGA event in late January or early February. We'll talk Tiger comeback with our friend Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer this week. Also, in this season of giving and selflessness, I want to revisit a conversation we had with Houstonian Shannon Fish of the Symetra Tour and what she did this year on the course for her hometown. And we'll have 10 predictive questions for the 2017-2018 wraparound season with Taylor Zarzer of SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio. But we begin with Ron Green Jr. And Ron, I want to back up. A couple of years ago, I remember you went down to the Bahamas. You were there at Albany. This was the year Tiger was sitting in the golf cart. You spent some time with him. I know you weren't down there this year, but just based on your experience in the golf cart talking with Tiger 2 years ago and what you witnessed on TV last weekend, how stark was the contrast?
Well, I think he would be happy if I don't come back, because 2 years ago I sat with him in the cart and he was, you know, had all the doom and gloom and was talking about how much his back hurt just sitting there. And we were riding around watching other players and wondering if that's what he was going to do. And then last year I was down there when he made all the birdies, but it didn't last. So this year I didn't go and he played well. And maybe this one sticks. But, I think he surprised all of us. There was an element of hopefulness as he got ready for that. But I don't think any of us expected to see him swing with the speed he did and sort of play with the power that looked pretty familiar. I mean, he was rusty in a couple spots, but not bad. I mean, he beat a lot of guys in the top 25 in the world. And I think for him, it was more tournament grind maybe than those guys. I mean, having been down there, that is a very laid back sort of thing. They're not quite putting in the prep work they put in advance of a U.S. Open or something. But for Tiger, it was a huge week. And I don't think there were any red flags at all. I mean, I think you come out of that thinking, well, when are we going to get to see him play for real? And guessing it'll be Torrey Pines or whatever. But it was like an early Christmas present.
Do you think he surprised himself, or do you think it was a "see, I told you" moment for him?
He would never admit he surprised himself. I think it would have been silly if he didn't have some uncertainty. Because, as he said, he wanted to see if he could get out there and do it for 4 days and all those sorts of things. I think he reinforced the hope he had that, hey, this is going to be okay. The remarkable thing to me is it was just a month into hitting balls. I mean, that was a quick ramp up from, hey, hit a few pitch shots, to hit a few wedge shots, to hit a few 7-irons, and suddenly there he is knocking it past Justin Thomas every once in a while.
Do you think that Camp Tiger may have been fudging the timeline a little bit, and perhaps he was given a release and the videos we were seeing of chipping balls was a little earlier than when it was released?
I don't know. I remember him at the President's Cup talking about he really hadn't done anything. He didn't know. We kept saying, what do you expect? What do you expect? I don't know. I got to get cleared first before I can start doing anything. So, excuse me. That was, what, 1st of October. So, I mean, I think he'd been able to hit chip shots and do a lot of that short game stuff for a while. And so, you know, as I tell myself every fall and winter when it gets to this time of the year, okay, I'm not going to play much golf the next couple months, but just find a day or two every week to go out and hit some chips and putts and stay with it. Of course, I never do. But I think if you can do that, I think that helped, gave a little rapid increase to his ramping up there.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking dead aim. You mentioned the word rust, and if I only saw rust in one area, it was this, and it was a very big picture thing. On Saturday, there were some conditions out there. The wind was blowing, and you and I both know that golfers hate wind above everything else. The best players in the world were only shooting 1 and 2 under on Saturday. He shot 3 over, and I attributed that entirely to rust in not having the experience of playing in competition and in some not so great conditions in a while.
Yeah, I mean, nobody broke 70 on Saturday in the wind down there. But yeah, so I think that's exactly a case where, if he's in mid-season form, he scrubs a shot or two or three off of that probably. I mean, some days you just get caught on the wrong side of the wind and nothing quite works. But, that was the day where it could have been really bad. And I think he kept it together, got off to the bad start, brought it back some. And, he hit a couple scruffy chip shots, pitch shots. But, if you watch enough of that, I mean, I watched Hideki Matsuyama just, laid a sod over it at his feet a couple of times. There's a reason Charlie Hoffman grabbed that hybrid every time he missed the green and rolled it up on the hill. Because, some of the shots Tiger missed, they were hard shots. And I think the more you get out there, the better you get. But, we see it now. I mean, the way they had it shaved off and cut so tight around the greens at Albany, they do it a lot of places, but talk to any teachers now, they talk about more and more they deal with people, what they want to call the chip yips, but they lose their confidence around the greens from hitting off these super tight lies. And even if you're Tiger Woods, you're on a tight lie with what green there is into you, trying to hit it up a slope higher than your head and stop it. I mean, that's pretty hard stuff to do, and I think he'll sort of tidy that up.
Ron, what is your theory? I've been thinking about this a lot the last couple of weeks. What is your theory as to why every move that Tiger makes, even 3 years removed from him being even a dot on the radar screen in terms of competition, why is it that Tiger Woods captures not just the golfing imagination and interest, but the entire sports world imagination and interest like he does? Last week was college football, one of their biggest weekends. It was Championship Saturday, and all of those games were page 2 to a golfer doing an exhibition in the Bahamas.
Well, that Thursday first round, it was not quite a where were you moment, but just how many people stopped to look in? I was listening to one of the PGA Tour radio thing that afternoon. Guys were calling in and say, I took the day off from work just so I could sit home and watch Tiger. I mean, you would do that for Phil or Rory or Jordan or anybody else, but he was so good and such a magnetic presence. Obviously he... some people didn't like him at all, but he's such a huge figure in the game and in sports, and he went so far beyond sports in his impact. And sure, there have been other things that have factored into the arc of his life, but, I think there was also the sense that, okay, we've had these sort of false start comebacks. There's a sense with this fusion surgery, like, it may be now or never. If we're ever going to get him back, if he's ever going to have a chance to finish the career on his terms, that this is the time we're going to find out. Now, it's not going to happen 1 week in the Bahamas, but you wanted to see if, okay, what if? You understand the reality. He's going to be 42 at the end of the month, and sure, guys have won a lot of tournaments in their 40s, but, the sand is starting to run out in the hourglass a little bit, and just sort of the hope that, okay, maybe he surprised us and dazzled us in so many other ways. What if this is the last time, one last time, and he pulls off this ultimate sort of magic trick?
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. Another thing that I noticed watching him throughout the 4 rounds, and I don't think I watched any round in its entirety, but I caught bits and pieces, and I watched a lot of it on the weekend. But one thing that really stood out to me, and I didn't hear anybody really commentating on it, Tiger in his prime always appeared to me to be a tortured soul. He loved winning, But he just, it was a grind. It just, you saw the concentration and the focus and the intensity. And I realized that this, you know, was not a PGA Tour event per se, but, you know, it had to mean a lot to him. But I saw Tiger Woods playing golf with visible and palpable joy. That's the only word I could think of that I don't think I'd ever seen him physically express before. Did you notice that, and have you seen him do that before?
Oh, I think she was obvious. I think, he talked about it. He goes, I just am so happy to be back and be part of the grind and be part of the competition. And, you know, I mean, that, he sat there for a long time, wondering if that could be gone forever. And I think when he gets back and fully engaged and playing a regular schedule, when Thursday and Friday rolls around, I mean, he's going to go back in to have those blinders on and everything. But I do think he is a somewhat different person. I think, you know, telling some of the story, some of the things he said in his pre-tournament press conference about it's nice to get up and grab a golf club when you get out of bed and not use it as a crutch. Tiger would have never said that 10 years ago. And that little line about, I want these young guys to see what those other guys had to deal with for a while. You know, I mean, that was more like the old Tiger. But, you know, I think there is a happiness and a joy there. And I think, I totally believe him. He talks about, you know, where this ultimately started was going back to finding just a quality of life so that, you know, he didn't have to lay in the bed all the time or sit on the couch and not be able to go outside or do whatever he wanted to. And so, you know, that's behind him now, and hopefully it stays behind him.
Get you out of here on this. You were at the President's Cup this past year when Phil held a press conference, and Phil had some unbelievably telling comments in his pressers there, one of which that I'll never forget was he talked about being around this young generation of golfers, the Spieths, the Rickies, the Justins, and he talked about being around them and how they have influenced him to a point that he says, you know, they've taught me things and I've observed their way of doing things that I wish I would have known 20 years ago. Do you think that with Tiger serving as vice captain on the last Ryder Cup and the last President's Cup, maybe the last two President's Cup now that I think about it, and being around these young guys in that capacity, do you think that seeing the way they go about it, they want to beat each other's brains in. There's no question about the competitive nature of those guys, but that they all seem to have this great camaraderie and relationship off the course as well. Do you think that has sort of rubbed off on Tiger too?
Well, I think he likes being part of it. I don't think he was ever comfortable being one of the guys or for the longest time. Whether that's how Earl raised him or just his natural tendency, I think, you know, maybe there's a little bit of shyness too. And we can't imagine what it's like to have all the eyes on him like Tiger had all the time. But I think over time that, you know, I think it clicked a long time ago in the team things, the President's Cups and the Ryder Cups, that he liked being in there. And, you know, he's never going to be the loudest guy. He's never going to be Phil or, you know, the one sort of leading the chatter and everything. But I think it means a great deal to him, and I think, you know, through these last couple of years, he's gotten to know Justin and Jordan and all those guys and a couple of them. You know, Ricky and Justin talking about playing golf with him down there at home now that he's back playing. And I think he understands, he knows them, and they appreciate who he is and what he has done. And I think, yeah, I think he wants to still try to school them a little bit more, but I think he feels a little bit like one of the guys now. He's one of the older guys. But he's all right with that.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's our friend Ron Green Jr. And up next, we'll revisit a conversation we had with Shannon Fish of the Symetra Tour, a native Houstonian, and what she did for her hometown on the course. Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management. We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management. Shannon Fish is a golfer on the Symetra Tour. She's also a native Houstonian, as am I. In the wake of the devastation caused by Hurricane Harvey to our hometown, I was really moved by what she did on the course to help our peeps off of it. We had the chance to talk back in September. Let's go back a little bit, Shannon. Friday, August 25th, Saturday, August 26th. Where are you?
Friday, I was in Houston, up in Spring. With my folks, and my flight was supposed to be leaving Saturday around 6 o'clock in the evening, And by that time, it was, we realized that there was a good chance that I wasn't going to get out, and tried to change the flight and just didn't work. And so I ended up leaving Houston in the middle of that hurricane. We flew right through it from Bush Intercontinental up to Chicago.
See, that's what I didn't understand. I thought for sure that both Bush and Hobby would have been closed starting that Friday. So when you flew out on Saturday, you flew out from Houston.
Yes. Yeah, so we had a bunch of delays, and I ended up not leaving until about 12:30 in the morning on Monday. And I'm quite confident that was probably one of the last flights that left Houston.
Oh, wow. So what went into the decision? Because I know it wasn't easy. You know, full disclosure, Shannon's been on the show before, if you didn't know it. She and I grew up in the same area. I'm just a couple of years older than Shannon, that's all. But we grew up in the same area, so I knew exactly where she is. And she went to Klein Oak High School. I know exactly where her parents live. And although we've ridden out tropical storms and hurricanes, because that's kind of par for the course when you grow up in Houston, Texas, there's that, should I leave or should I not? What went into your decision with your folks?
Sure. You know, we knew this one was going to be one of the bigger ones that we went through. Our house has been through multiple hurricanes and tropical storms and has been just fine, as well as our neighborhood there. So I was a little worried about, you know, staying behind. I knew there was going to be a lot of aftermath, that I felt like I had a responsibility to be there for the people in my community and for my family in case this one was a little bit different. They kept telling us on the news, you know, don't correlate this with other hurricanes and tropical storms we've been through. This one's far more serious. But at the same time, where I am on the money list for Symetra Tour, and the person Sioux Falls being the biggest one of the year, you know, it was important for my career moving forward too. So it was kind of a catch 22, but ultimately I ended up deciding to head up to South Dakota.
All right. So you get out of Houston, you fly into Chicago, because I'm not sure how many direct flights there are to Sioux Falls anywhere. What is, you rent a car, I guess. How long is the drive from Chicago to Sioux Falls?
Well, you know, many tour life here, we drive everywhere.
Yeah.
We had 3 weeks off, and thankfully I have some Houston native cousins that live in Chicago that allowed me to keep my car up there for a couple weeks. So I ended up landing in Chicago about 3 o'clock in the morning, got to a hotel, took a little nap, and then ended up fetching my car from my cousin's house and drove 8.5 hours to Sioux Falls that day.
Oh, my God. So you have all that time in the car as well. I know what I was like. I was a basket case from the moment the storm rolled in, you know, that Friday night, Saturday morning, and all the way through, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I barely got a wink of sleep. My parents, I know I was driving them crazy, calling them, saying, are you guys okay? Are you guys okay? I can't imagine. Did you just spend that whole drive on the phone just talking with somebody, or?
I was trying to get a hold of a lot of folks back home, friends and family, but, you know, in cases like that, a lot of the cell towers are tied up, so it's difficult to get through. So that made the drive just a little bit longer, but when I could get through, I wanted to keep them on the phone as long as I could, just to know what was happening and to know if everybody is safe, and was it strengthening, was it weakening, what was it doing? So, yeah, I had a lot of questions for sure.
So Metro Tour golfer Shannon Fish is our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, it's Monday the 28th. It's more than obvious that Harvey is devastating our hometown. And I read this simple tweet from @ShannonTFish. By the way, you should follow her. She's fantastic on Twitter. I will be donating $100 for every birdie and $500 for every eagle I make this week. Now, I want to point out one thing if people hadn't figured out or didn't know this before. No one is getting rich on the Symetra Tour. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I made just shy of $18,000 in 15 starts this year.
Yeah, it is a very old school existence. In fact, when she talks about how they all sort of travel together, the Symetra Tour existence. If you read about the old PGA Tour of the 40s and 50s with everybody sharing hotel rooms and sharing cars, it's a very similar existence, and these ladies work really hard trying to get to the PGA Tour. So when you say you'll be donating $100 and $500 and you've only made 18 grand for the year, that's a hell of a statement to make and a pledge to make. How much thought went into this? Did you, was it just something you said, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there? Had you been talking with other players on the tour at this point, or was this strictly a you decision?
No, I was just sitting down having lunch in the clubhouse at Willow Run up in Sioux Falls. And, you know, I did this last year when we had those really bad floods in spring about April time.
Right.
Here in Albany, New York. And, I did the same thing and raised $800. None of the par fives in Albany were real reachable for me. But nonetheless, they were in Sioux Falls. And I thought, well, I did this one time. It felt pretty good. Let's try this again. And like you said, I mean, we're not making a whole lot of money out here. I've been making quite a few birdies this year, and I was just thinking, you know, I'm a Houstonian. I can't be there physically, but I definitely need to step up to the plate here and help in some way.
And then this thing sort of caught fire in terms of support from the tour, support from sponsors, support from fellow players. How fast did that start, and how soon were you made aware of how everyone else was stepping up?
I'd say a couple hours. The tour notified me that they and also our title sponsor, Great Life, were going to match my birdie and eagle pledge. And so, I mean, to me, I was thinking, wow, this is going from a couple $100 idea, maybe a $1,000 idea, to $3,000. And you hear so much on the news that anything helps. $10, $20, you know, $100 can feed 100 people, you know. So I was thinking, wow, we're really going to help here. And then I was elated by that news and so grateful. And then the big call came, and Tom Walsh with Great Life, again, our title sponsor in Sioux Falls, let me know that he was going to match up to $50,000 and open the pledge, birdie pledge, to all the players. So it opened it up to the fans in Sioux Falls, the players, and then some of the players were calling me, texting me, saying, hey, I want to do this personally too. What do I do? And so really this, you know, small idea turned into something that could potentially reach $100,000 or more. And it was, when I got that call, it was just really hard to put into words how I felt. I was very emotional. I'm not a very emotional person, but just to know that being 1,000 miles away from home, that my tour family out here and the people of Sioux Falls were definitely behind Houston.
Shannon Fish is a professional women's golfer on the Symetra Tour. She's our guest taking Dead Aim. This week in Charlotte, I was part of a radiothon for 13 hours on the air, and we raised, we loaded six trucks with 250 tons and over $2.5 million worth of supplies to Houston. And I think when I make this next statement, you're going to know what I'm feeling and what I'm talking about. We go through so much in life thinking that there's no good left in the world. You know, you're very active on Twitter. I am too. Social media is just the breeding ground of meanness and cowardice. And you get the idea sometimes that people are just looking for a reason to be negative and to do mean things and to say mean things. And you sort of become jaded on society. And it's a shame that any of these things have to happen. But when they do, Shannon, I can't tell you how much better I feel about the people in this world and their desire to do good for other people after what I went through this week. And I'm sure that's the same feeling you have.
Yeah, absolutely. My faith and hope and humanity has absolutely been restored. There wasn't a lot of pushback to this idea. There was more support than I could have ever dreamed for. And just to know that that people were behind this idea and behind Houston was, it was definitely a life-changing experience for myself.
So we've got sponsors behind it. We've got your little idea that sponsors and everyone else has gotten behind, fellow players, fans in Sioux Falls. At the end of the day, when all is said and done, this little girl from Spring, Texas, how much money was finally raised and produced for Houston?
We officially announced on Sunday $91,000.
I'm laughing in joy. I think that's so great.
It's certainly far beyond my expectations and definitely more than I could have dreamt of doing. It certainly showed me that, you know, one small act of kindness from anybody really can take a snowball effect and do a lot of good going forward. And another little bit of news is that Great Life will be extending these birdie pledges throughout our season through the Tour Championship in October. So we're definitely still counting and definitely hopeful of reaching over $100,000.
Oh, you'll do that easily, Shannon. This is so great. Shannon Fish is a professional women's golfer on the Symetra Tour, our guest taking Dead Aim. I mentioned earlier that we are from the same area. I know that my parents were, you know, but for the grace of God go I. They, you know, they were high and dry, and they are fine. How are your parents? How is the area? I know that your high school, Klein Oak High School, was actually used as a shelter for a time. How is the area where you're from? How is everyone doing?
My folks are fine. Our house made it through just fine. No water damage. But you remember Willow Creek Golf Club, don't you, Charlie?
Absolutely.
So that big creek that runs through Willow Creek caused a lot of devastation to those homes right there in Northampton, which is only about 10 blocks away from us. Mm-hmm. So the folks over there have water from the floor to the ceiling, and we're being rescued off the roofs of their home. And, of course, I haven't been home yet to see the damage, but from what I hear from my folks, it's something like you really couldn't imagine.
Yeah, I couldn't take my eyes off of the NBC News affiliate in Houston, Channel 2, KPRC's web pages and news mm-hmm. feeds when it was happening. And you'll know this area as well, too. They were all of a sudden on Jones Road going into Norchester subdivision. And I'm like, mm-hmm. wait a minute, that's where I went to junior high school. What is this? And I look and I see friends' houses and ex-girlfriends' houses where the water line is, you know, up to the second floor. And, mm-hmm. and I'm stunned to silence. I don't know what to say. And, you know, what you have done makes me so happy, because I know that it may just be a drop, a drop in the ocean, no pun intended. But, you know, like you said, $100 will feed 100 people. $91,000 will do a whole lot of good. And maybe whatever you've done, if there's some family out there that has lost hope and lost everything, you know, maybe what you've done will allow them to stay in a hotel for a week and get some hot food in them and give them a new lease on life. And really, really, what else could we do, right?
Right. I mean, like I was telling somebody a couple of days ago, I know J.J. Watt's doing a lot for Houston. I think he might be up to near $20 million. Matt Carpenter is donating $10,000 per home run through the rest of the season. And, you know, I don't want people to get discouraged by a small donation because, I mean, like we talked about, I'm Shannon Fish on the Symetra Tour. I'm not living the high life by any means, but we are all definitely capable of making a difference.
Well, I'm proud of you as a friend, and I'm proud of you as a Houstonian, and I want to congratulate you on your efforts and continuing to fight the fight for the hometown. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely, and thank you for what you guys are doing up there. We appreciate it.
In this season of giving and selflessness, I can think of no other story I would want to revisit than that of Shannon Fish and what she did on the Symetra Tour to help our hometown of Houston in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. And when we return, 10 predictive questions for the 2017-2018 wraparound season with Taylor Zarzer of SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management. Hey, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management, and now 10 predictive questions for the 2017-2018 wraparound season with our friend from SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, Taylor Zarzer. Taylor, 3 years ago, I asked over-under wins for Tiger Woods. The last two, I've asked over-under tournament appearances by Tiger Woods, and the number I set is ridiculously high at 8.5. This year, I'm simplifying things. Over-under major championship appearances by Tiger Woods, the number's 1.5.
I'll go over. I'll say that he at least plays in two majors. I'm hesitating because I'm hoping that he doesn't get carried away with how good he feels right now and tries to play too much golf like he did at the beginning of 2017. I hope he plays down there in the Bahamas, and then I hope he realizes, you know what, I need to play once a month leading into the Masters and believe that if he's going to play in any majors, it would be the Masters. I mean, that makes the most sense. I think given his health and his experience there that he can play that golf course anytime. So I would imagine that he would show up there, but I don't know that I would recommend him going to Shinnecock or to Carnoustie, which are the next two places, unless he is really firing on all cylinders. And then you've got Belle Reve in St. Louis, which he certainly could play there, but I'll say he at least plays in two.
You know, he's got lifetime exemptions, or at least until he's 65 or whatever, in three out of the four. But it occurred to me, this is his last year of being fully exempt. And I never thought we'd say that. This is Tiger Woods' last year of being fully exempt for the U.S. Open. I just can never imagine a time when Tiger Woods says, you know what, I got to go to Des Moines to qualify. That, he'll never do that, right?
No, he wouldn't do that. He would just go win a golf tournament, try to win a PGA tournament, or put himself within the world, you know, the criteria and the world rankings to get in. But I would like that. I'll loop for him if he wants to try to local qualify or regionally qualify somewhere.
What a story that would be. I looped for Tiger Woods, tried to qualify for the U.S. Open. Taylor Zarzer with SiriusXM is our guest, Taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions for the 2017-2018 season. More likely to complete the career Grand Slam this year, Rory at Augusta or Spieth at the PGA at Belle Reve?
That's another great one. I'm going to go with Rory at the Masters. I think that both are going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. I think that Spieth is right that the PGA Championship, especially with the setup they had at Quail Hollow, is going to be most difficult for him to achieve. But I think Rory's got a better chance. I'm not picking either one to happen in 2018. If one were to happen, I would pick Rory in 2018 to win the Masters. This guy has had too many inconsistent holes at Augusta National, Rory McIlroy. He makes a boatload of birdies. He's always around the top five and feels like he's somewhere on the board, but he has awful nine-hole stretches and several two- or three-hole stretches where he'll make bogeys and doubles, and you see a lot of circles and squares on that scorecard. He needs to rectify that at Augusta National and show more consistent form for 72 holes before I'm willing to pick him. Now, having said that, I think Rory will contend to be the number one player in the world in 2018. If he's got a full season of health, I still think he's the best player in the world.
See, I feel that way, too. I always go by the eyeball test. And when everybody's firing on all cylinders, I've never seen anyone make the game look easier than Rory McIlroy does. He knocks it miles down the middle and then knocks it to a distance where you and I could make the putt with our eyes closed. I mean, he's just that good.
Yeah, he is. The only guy I would argue with you on is the guy that used to be the poster of another person on Rory's wall, which was Tiger, but yes, in this day and age, I think that he does. And obviously the advantage he has over Tiger is he's one of the greatest drivers of the golf ball we've ever seen, especially when he's healthy. His short game and especially his putting inside 10 feet are maybe the one weakness he has in his game. But to your point that you just made, if everyone is playing their best golf, everyone has a clean bill of health, Rory McIlroy is still the best player in the world.
Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka, are we more likely to see them build off of their major championship success or have that chasing appearance fees hangover that we see?
I think that it's more likely that Koepka would have that before Thomas. I think that Thomas' confidence is just out of control right now. And now that he has had so many good moments that he can carry with him, he is fearless on the golf course. And we have seen him go through stretches in the past where it feels like he has mentally battled himself more than physically in terms of any mechanical issue. It's just been more battling himself. And I think he has crossed that point. I still think he's hard on himself at times, and when he has a bad hole or a bad round, he seems to take it out on himself. But I don't think we're going to see as much of that as we used to now that this guy is just, obviously he was the player of the year in the calendar year in 2017. And I think he is going to contend to be one of the top players in the game too, with McIlroy, Spieth, and Dustin Johnson. I think those, maybe you throw in Matsuyama, but I think those guys are going to contend to be at the top of the sport. Koepka, I can't figure out. He's got as much talent, almost as much talent as Dustin Johnson. And I was there last year at Erin Hills. I mean, that wasn't a fair fight when that guy is going to play like that. And he always seems to be around the leaderboard for major championships. But I don't know how much he loves the game, Charlie. I mean, he plays every 3 or 4 weeks. He checks out and goes on these long trips with friends. And I just am not as convinced that the guy is doing what it takes yet to be one of the very best players in the world. I understand that he's ranked, I think, 7th at the moment, which is, it speaks to the guy's an amazing amount of talent. And he brags about how little he practices or how little he works on his game and shows up and shoots 65, which makes everyone that is near him, self-included, mad when he says stuff like that. But I don't know that this guy has fallen in love with preparing to be great yet. That's one thing I'm waiting on.
Taylor Zarza with SiriusXM is our guest taking Dead Aim. Been asking this question for the last 3 years. It remains the same. Over under wins for one Philip Mickelson, and the number is still 1.5.
I'm going to go under. I think he will win a tournament. I think the number is 1. I think that if he does win, it's going to be early, like on the West Coast somewhere.
See, I do too. I still think he can win Phoenix. Every year he plays great out there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he wins in there, or he wins whatever they're calling the tournament in the desert, which he has a relationship with. I'm calling it the Hope because I know everyone listening knows what that means. But the tournament in the desert of California, I think he's got a real chance there to those kind of places. He always plays well at Riviera. So I would imagine that if he's going to win, it's going to be early. I know he feels really good about his game. I mean, ever since the PGA Championship, which was awful, here in Charlotte, he went and saw someone and talked about getting better focus, and it made a big difference. I mean, what we saw at the President's Cup was great play from Phil. He played well in the Fries, the first tournament of the year out in Napa, and then did well overseas in Asia, too. I think that this guy is showing some signs, but he'll be 47 years old next year. Father Time's undefeated. So I think the safe play is to go under 1.5.
Taylor, would you be more surprised to see Bubba Watson or Pat Perez on the Ryder Cup team?
Bubba Watson.
I agree.
I think you need to throw in one caveat. Would you be more surprised to see Pat Perez or Bubba Watson if he continues to play that awful golf ball?
Now that's over with. He's out of the Volvic contract, so I felt good about that.
He's out of the Volvic contract, but I still think that Bubba's game is in the past. That he needs to show that he's going to be able to play consistent golf before I could put him back in that conversation. I think Pat Perez is playing the best golf of his life his early 40s. So I would – and how much fun would that be, by the way? My only concern is – as I guess I would call him a colleague, since he does a show for us on SiriusXM, my only concern is that Pat might have too much fun in Paris, and that might rub off on some of his teammates, but that would be fantastic. He is one of the most likable guys on tour. I would love to see Pat Perez in a Ryder Cup.
Pat Perez and the European press at a Ryder Cup in Paris
It's almost too good a script. He almost has to be named to the team, even if he doesn't make it. You know, you brought up Desire earlier with Brooks Koepka. I just feel like in the last year and a half, I've seen a light go out in Bubba Watson. I don't see the desire to be on the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's got an incredible amount of wealth. He, to his credit, he's trying to make a difference in his community just outside of Pensacola, Florida. He's really gotten interested in that. He's enjoying being a father and a husband, which nobody can criticize them for that. But, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think the guy does love the game or is fired up about the game as he once was. It's probably because of the way he's been playing in the last couple of years. But, listen, maybe with the new golf ball, he finds all of a sudden some new confidence. But I'm going to need to see it first before I can put him ahead of Perez.
Ricky, Hideki, and Rahm, the only three players currently in the top 10 in the world who have not won a major. Who wins one first, and will it be this year?
I think that it's going to be John Rahm. I think that's a great question. You can't go wrong with any of the three, which is why you're asking it, I know. But Rahm is the one that I would say it breaks through. Until you have battle scars like Ricky and Hideki have, I think the wise play is to go with somebody that hasn't had any big heartbreaking moment in a major championship. You know, Matsuyama and Fowler haven't done anything necessarily to choke majors away, but they've been on the leaderboard, and on a Saturday night they have slept close enough to the lead where they have thought, oh my gosh, is tomorrow the day? And that's happened several times. Rahm hasn't really necessarily been there yet. And I think that once he puts himself in that position, he's going to have so much confidence. And I think Augusta is a spot where he could excel. Fowler last year on that Sunday at Augusta was shocking to see how poorly he played. Mm. Paired with Spieth, by the way. Matsuyama, we thought, was going to win here in Charlotte and obviously had a disappointing weekend. But I do think that all three of those guys are going to win major championships. The biggest story internationally would be Matsuyama and the impact it would have on Asian golf, particularly in Japan. I think Fowler's going to do it too. I don't know that I'm ready to say it's going to be in 2018, but I do think it happens in the next few years. I will tell you, I think that the guy is as important to the game of golf, to why all the people out there are so likable, the young guns are so likable right now, because he's the bridge. He's the guy that sends the text and says, let's go play golf tomorrow. Let's get together. Let's drink beer. Let's watch football. Let's fly to some place and have a little vacation, just the boys. Let's fly someplace with the girls. He's the guy that does that. And in every, self-included, everybody loves the guy. I've walked several holes with him in practice rounds, and he is just as friendly to me as he is to Justin Thomas or to Jordan Spieth. And I just applaud him so much for the way that he treats people and the impact he's had on your son and so many people. It is amazing. And I do. I think he's going to win major championships. But I just don't know that it absolutely is going to happen in 2018. John Rahm is just loaded with talent. This guy has an advantage. Until they change the golf ball, which might happen, he has such an advantage off the tee with his length. I think he might knock the door down first.
Taylor Zarzer of SiriusXM is our guest taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions for the 2017-2018 season. Are we being too confident and too euphoric after the President's Cup, or do you see our American team just handling their business in Paris?
They're clearly the favorites right now. I mean, they have so much confidence. The formula is working, and I applaud them for basically copying the European model, which is you're a player, you are an aging player, you are a vice captain, you are a captain, you go back to being a vice captain. And they're doing that with the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup. And they've created so much chemistry and trust among the team, among the players, and among the captains. And I go back to Fowler again. I think that he is responsible for that as anybody. Phil Mickelson, I thought that was such a cool thing what he said when it was over. He said, you know, I've learned so much from these young guys and how they exchange information. He said, shame on me for going through so much of my career and being so private and not exchanging information with other players. And Tiger didn't do it either. You know, Phil and Tiger did not do that with their fellow players. And these guys they understand each other's strengths in each other's weaknesses, and because of that, they have a really strong bond. I mean, they are bulletproof on that golf course right now. So the European team is significantly better than the international team, and it's going to be on foreign soil. And correct me if I'm wrong, Charlie, I'm going to say that it was 1993, the last time the United States won on foreign soil. So I think that that's right. The Belfry and Davis Love in 1993, I think, is the last time that they won. So, I mean, it's a long time, but this team right now is a machine. There's only going to be a couple of spots open. You know, maybe a Chapel or a Hoffman or a Phil falls off. If Phil's playing anywhere close to the top 20, they'll put him on the team, and you've seen why the last few years. But if they're going to take off a Chapel and a Hoffman, they're going to put on a Patrick Cantlay, who just won, you know, who falls in that category of bulletproof and so confident at the moment. So it's going to be a heck of a team that they put on the golf course next fall.
Thank you for bringing up Patrick Cantlay. As we're recording this, he just came off his first PGA Tour win in Vegas. Xander Schauffele or Patrick Cantlay, two guys that I really enjoyed following from about the middle of June all the way through the end of the season. Thought both of them were incredible. At the end of 2018, of those two, who will we be saying had the better year?
I think it's going to be Cantlay. Schauffele is fun to watch, and he is a grinder who gets the most out of his game, especially when he's near a leaderboard. And it was impressive to see what he's done coming up from the web.com tour last year to winning twice this season. But Cantlay, there aren't 10 guys on tour more talented than this guy. This guy is loaded with all kinds of game. And each time somebody plays with him, whether it's Spieth or Dustin Johnson or Ricky Fowler, they walk off and say, that guy is going to win major championships. He's going to be on Ryder Cup team. He doesn't have a weakness. His weakness is all of the hell that the guy has been through in the last 5 or 6 years with injuries and with the tragic loss of his caddy a few years ago. But if you watched on Sunday, the guy's underneath a tree.
That's a top five shot.
Over the water into the wind, you know, at the flag to say, I've had enough of this. Let's go home. And, I mean, he can hit any kind of shot. Patrick Cantlay is the real deal. You ask me each year for a Justin Thomas a couple years ago or Matthew Fitzpatrick, Cantlay is going to have a big 2018.
All right, well, so much for your gut prediction. We'll let that slide there. Get you out of here on this. Yes or no, do you think the USGA finds a way to screw up the setup at Shinnecock and once again make themselves the story at the U.S. Open?
I'd be surprised if that were the case. I think that they learned their lesson. As you saw at Erin Hills last year, they went overboard erring on the side of caution. And I think that they're going to make – Shinnecock is just one of the hardest golf courses in the world, no matter what. So it's going to be a harder test of golf than Erin Hills. It's just because of its layout it will be. But – they're not going to let that happen again.
He's one of the best in the business from SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio. That is Taylor Zarzur. Also, I hope you enjoyed our revisit of a conversation we had with Shannon Fish of the Symetra Tour, a native Houstonian. Her story of what she did on the course to help her hometown. Really, really amazing stuff. Also, I'd like to thank Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for his time this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered? No worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast on iTunes, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Weather-wise, well, you can play golf. It's going to be cold, but you can play golf, and if you are brave enough to put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management.